I do think that long term, coming out of a crisis situation, we can decide to think bigger about our lives.
I'd like to welcome Laura Vanderkam to the Productivityist Podcast. Laura, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you for having me back.
So the new book is called The New Corner Office, How the Most Successful People Work From Home. So this is kind of like an autobiography, right? It's like a memoir of sorts.
a few stories from my experience, but a lot more from other people who've built, you know, their careers or their empires with a strong work from home component, and sharing their secrets for how they get stuff done, and hopefully how readers can as well.
Why this book, in throwing you a softball right out of the gate? Why this book right now?
Well, there are a lot of people who are working from home for the first time in the wake of COVID-19. And I know that it's hard to gauge where things will be, but life may be getting back to normal in many places. But even so, now that people have tasted what it is like to work from home, few organizations can argue anymore that it will never work for them. And so a lot of places are going to be landing on some sort of hybrid model. You know, people work from home a few days per week, work in the office a few days per week, or maybe work in the office 1 week a month, work from home the others. And I think that's great. I think there are good reasons to do that, that working from home occasionally can be a strategic advantage for any career, and any organization that embraces it can be more nimble. And so this book is for those who want to come to this sort of mature understanding of what it means to work from home and how they can build their career and work from home productively and ambitiously.
Before we get into the contents of the book, because it's for those who are you know, gonna pick it up, and you can pick it up now. It's a read that not only quick is not the right, but it's a read you can get into, and it's one that you can revisit, which I really like. Because there's that reinforcement that you need, I think, when you're facing a kind of a new challenge or something new, not just from the perspective of the person actually working from home, but like you said, from the organization that's either been thrust into it and now goes, oh, this can kind of work, or kind of has been thrust into it and have no choice but to deal with it on a more ongoing basis. But I want to talk a little bit more about your journey to this book from the last, like, your writing career to this point. You've had several books come out. You've been on the show before when we talked about Off the Clock. What led you to this book specifically? Was it just you saw a need, you wanted to fill it? Was it something that you like? How did that come to pass? Because whenever I'm talking to an author who has a good body of work, it's always interesting to see the path that their writing journey has taken.
Well, this was really just pure opportunity seizing. That I've written about careers, I've written about productivity. This is a need that people had, and my publisher thought I could probably turn it around quite quickly. Coming out in July is a fairly quick turnaround for a book. Mm-hmm. That was what it was. And honestly, I mean, you'll appreciate this. I've spent a lot of my time over the past few years traveling and giving speeches, right? Like I go to a company and give a speech at their big whatever day, or to a convention and give a speech for that. And basically in the span of like 3 days in March, that part of my business completely disappeared.
Right.
So I needed something else to do with myself. And pivoting to talk more about this is certainly one direction.
So right when we get into the book, the first chapter, I love the title of it because it speaks to me. And we've had this conversation more as well. Manage by task, not time. Can you, especially right now where time is so fluid, I mean, we know what day it is, mainly because it's our job, but but there's a lot of thing where time kind of blends in, especially when you work from home and the environment doesn't really change, and especially when you're not able to leave home, everything kind of blends in together. Why do you posit and put forth this piece of advice as to manage by task and not time?
Well, it really helps people focus on what needs to get done, as opposed to time, which is often a more inefficient way of looking at things. And I mean, obviously, I love time. My whole life is writing about time, but it's not the only way to gauge success. And even you know, when you look at it and really drill into it, even very progressive workplaces often judge so much by time rather than task. I mean, why are all meetings 30 or 60 minutes? It's certainly not that all human endeavors can be achieved in 30 or 60 minutes. It's just that that's the length of meetings. And so when you need to meet, you schedule it for 30 or 60 minutes, as opposed to thinking, well, who needs to be there? What are those people doing? What are they going to do with their time that they're there? And what conclusion do we need to reach? And then figuring out what sort of time that requires. So it's, you know, a lot of stuff is managed by time. But the reason this is really important for working from home is if you've been in an office most of your life, you have a very good sense when the day is done. And that sense is that it's 5 o'clock, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever time is quitting time in your particular industry. And when you work from home, that is a lot less apparent. And so people can feel very out of sorts. Like, how do I know I have put in a good day? Do I need to keep working all night? Should I be half working and half surfing the web? Because I'm not sure. Maybe I should be doing something. Or I'm feeling ill at ease because I'm not sure if I'm productive or not. And the good news about managing yourself or other people by task is that when you say, okay, these are the 6 tasks I need to get done today, when those 6 tasks are done, well, you've put in a good day. Mm-hmm. And so if it's 4:30, not 5:30, well, you don't have to keep sitting there just because of the group norms. You can still feel like, well, I have marched my 20 miles today. I am good.
Well, and I think the one thing that this season has kind of taught us is that, you know, results oriented is a better way to see, you know, how productive someone is as opposed to the time they put in. Because if you're not in front of the people in your office and they can't see you, there's trust there. And when you are hitting those, you know, those notes every single day of like, oh, I got those 6 tasks done. I got those. Not only that, but I've also moved a little bit forward. And that's another whole cadence thing that we can talk about a little bit later. It really does kind of change the dynamic in which, you know, you and an organization can operate, right?
Yeah, well, and it's actually more satisfying too. I mean, there's nothing inherently satisfying about it being 5 p.m.
Right.
But you know, various research into what makes people feel engaged in their work and feel like they are making progress really is these series of small wins. And so each day you set out, well, these are the goals I need to reach. And, you know, then you do them, you achieve those small wins, you feel good. You feel like you want to keep going the next day too. And yes, since your boss can't really keep tabs on where you are and what you are doing, it's really a much better way to manage people as well.
When people start working from home and they're not used to this, and we're going to talk about the individual right now, so the person reading this book, how important do you believe it is to try to engineer or create some sense of I'll use the term normalcy, but they'll just use that term that so that the transition is not as jarring, because I mean, there's lots of things going on that can be quite jarring and anxiety can show up. So what are some of the, like a couple of tactics that people can take if they've been thrust into this, or maybe that they haven't tried yet, that are like, okay, this feels like it's something that I've been doing or I'm used to doing.
Well, so, I mean, a lot of workplaces did just sort of recreate the workday. I mean, anything that would have been a meeting suddenly became a Zoom call. And, you know, if you were expected to be at the office at 9 o'clock, like there'd be a Slack check-in at 9 o'clock. And, you know, I think this is somewhat of a missed opportunity because it doesn't take advantage of the upsides of working from home. But certainly when you examine your own work styles, a lot of people find that having some sort of transition ritual to start the day is very helpful. It can be whatever. If you're in a place where schools are open again, like walking your kids to school and then walking home, well, that's like a fake commute. You know, mm-hmm. it can be helpful for getting a little fresh air and exercise and transitioning from home life to now we're at work life. But it could be anything. It'd be that you walk to the end of the driveway and get the newspaper and walk in and put it on the table and now go into your home office and now you're working. Or maybe you play some sort of pump you up soundtrack. That's the thing that tells you it's time to start work. But doing something is very helpful for many people. And equivalent to that is doing something on the other end of it, right? That when you are working in an office, you know when the day is at least done for now because you left. Like you have to leave at some point, right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to sleep there. So that is a transition ritual as well. And I think a lot of people benefit from having some sort of transition ritual at the end of, you know, the bulk of their workday. Maybe it's setting their to-do list for tomorrow. Maybe it's, you know, sending a quick email to their supervisor saying what happened. Maybe it's, you know, again, playing a song or writing in a journal or whatever it is, but, and then shutting the laptop down, but having some way to say, okay, the day is done is also helpful for compartmentalizing some of that work stress and letting you be present for the rest of your life.
How crucial do you think it is to have some self-empathy during times like this too, when you are making this transition and there's so many different ways of approaching things? Like, I know, and you and I've been in this game for a while where people will get a new app and they'll dive in and they'll try to do it all at once. And then they'll abandon the app because it got too complicated or overwhelming, or they'll learn a time management strategy, or they'll go in full, you know, guns a-blazing, and all of a sudden they're like, it becomes overwhelming, or something shows up and it throws them off their game and they abandon it altogether. How important, especially when they have little to no control in some situations, at least we're talking about the present moment where they may not be able to go into an office environment and they want to, they're dealing with this. How important is that ability to say, you know, like to have some self-care and to be gentle to a degree?
Yeah, no, I think it's important. And one of the points I stress in the New Corner office is that working from home is a skill. And as with any skill, people are terrible on day one. Like, March 2020 featured a lot of really, really horrible Zoom calls with people speaking on top of each other and, you know, the screen turning green.
Some of them went viral. Some bathroom exactly. trips went viral, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and it's not even just that. Or it's like figuring out what you're supposed to be doing with yourself, or, you know, making the mistake of working all night because you didn't ever have a sense of like, okay, I need to be able to march again tomorrow. Mm-hmm. There's just all sorts of things that can go wrong, or setting unclear directions for your employees, or, yeah. So many issues. It's a skill. You get better at a skill over time. And, you know, people do skills differently. Like, there can be good ways that look different. You know, if you think of a skill like playing basketball, someone like Steph Curry and LeBron James play basketball very differently, but they're both very good at it. So, mm-hmm. you know, figure out what works for you and aim to get better within the style that works for you. And the good news about working from home is that you can do that. I mean, so much more of it is self-directed and not so subject to the group norms that require you to do the same thing as everyone else.
Yeah, I was listening to James Clear talk to, I think it was Josh Peck on his podcast, Curious. And one of the things James brought up about habits was that people are more likely to follow the group rather than embrace a habit that they know is good because the group is not doing that. You know what I mean? They'll follow the crowd, kind of like that peer pressure. And that does, I mean, without, again, out of sight, out of mind, can kind of allow you to develop those personal subjective ways that you may want to work. And one of the things you talk about, which I think is often challenging for people when they're in a 9-to-5 situation. I know it is for me because I'm a night owl, and we've had this conversation before too, where, you know, matching your most important work, you talk about this, to your most productive time. I've always, since I started working from home and working for myself, the later part of the day, like, is my prime time for this sort of thing. And when you work in an office environment, there's often this, hey, we all do this at this time because this is the morning, and the morning everybody operates this way, but not everybody's good at that. So you have this opportunity. Can you share some of your insights as to how people can maybe get into this a little bit more if they haven't been able to do it before when they've been working outside of the home?
Yeah. I mean, when people do working from home well, they can work around their particular work styles with, of course, the caveat that if you work as part of a team, there needs to be some overlap.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be all 8 hours of the workday. I mean, I've talked to some organizations that they set kind of core hours, like everyone needs to be on from, let's say, 10 to 3. But then the other 3 hours or whatever can be whenever. They could be earlier, they could be later. And I think that's great, because if you've got somebody who's really good at what she does, but she's pretty much useless before 10 a.m., like there's nothing gained by forcing her to check in on Slack at 8 a.m. and just because that's the time that the workday should start. I mean, what is gained by that? You're better off sort of allowing for a bit more flexibility in working styles so people can figure out the way to work that works best for them.
Okay, I'm going to take a break from the conversation with Laura, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about the idea of how to get used to working from home and some of the other things that she really wants to talk about in the new book. But I want to talk about our sponsor for this episode, which is something you can definitely use in your new corner office, especially if you're using a Mac. Actually, it's really only if you're using a Mac because it is SetApp. SetApp is a subscription for Mac apps. Really, there's an app for almost any task, so you can stay in your flow and finish what you started with SetApp. SetApp packs over 180 high-quality apps into one. As I said, there's an app for almost any task. It's a great value at just $9.99 a month. So instead of paying thousands for separate licenses, there's just one flat monthly fee. And new apps are always being added to SetApp. Updates are free, and all the apps, this is a big one, are full-featured pro version, so you're not playing with limited apps. You get the whole deal with SetApp. And there are lots of great apps available. And just looking at the maintenance tasks alone, such as Disk Drill, Gemini, which of course was developed by MacPaw, who founded and created SetApp, iStat Menu, so you can monitor your Mac's health system, Backup Pro, because, you know, get Backup Pro, because you need to back up your Mac, of course. And then if you want to really kind of hack your Mac a bit, there's Bartender, which I've been using for a long time in the menu bar. A Better Touch tool, which I know my friend Brett Terpstra has talked about. It's another great one. And Brett's got a couple of apps in here. Marked is one of them. There are a lot of great apps in SetApp. You will not be lacking for apps. And that's the thing. SetApp has a dedicated curation team that only selects the highest quality apps. So you don't have to spend time on app discovery and testing. SetApp makes it easy to get the best tools when you need them. They're already in SetApp. So again, there's an app for almost any task, so you can stay in your flow and finish what you started. I want you to get started with SetApp today. So visit setapp.com and give SetApp a try. It's free for just 7 days, so give it a try. Setapp.com, get that 7-day free trial. And I know, as someone who's using it on my own Mac, that you're gonna get a lot out of SetApp. So give it a try today. Again, visit setapp.com and check out SetApp for free for 7 days. Do it now. And now let's get back to my conversation with Laura Vanderkam here on the Productivityist podcast. All right. So now we're into the point where I don't want to necessarily talk about when people are facing like the current, you know, COVID-19 situation, because I remember reading this article or seeing this cartoon rather about how there's a sinking boat and there's a shark swimming around this person on the lifeboat, and they're, you know, they look panicked, and the caption below says, "Now is the perfect time for you to start writing that novel." that's some of the thoughts that have been prevailing out there is, well, now you have all this time, you have all this stuff. And in chapter four, when I read it, I'm like, okay, I want to know what Laura means by this, because chapter four is think big. I'm like, she doesn't want people to start writing that novel and doing that stuff with that. You know what I mean? So, or maybe you do. So can you talk about the idea of when this chapter, to a degree, I mean, obviously I want people to pick up the book and check it out, but the idea of thinking big, you know, in when it comes to the new corner office.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I actually wrote an op-ed for the Washington Post earlier in the pandemic experience that was called "You Have Time to Write That Novel, You Just Don't Want to."
this is a very valid point. Yeah,
which is a valid point. You know, it's not a priority when we don't have. We say I don't have time. That means it's not a priority, and there may be very valid reasons that it is not a priority for you right now. If you feel like you're in a lifeboat with a shark circling, then that's not your priority. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you don't have time. Like somebody handed you a typewriter. Like, you know, it could take a while for that shark to get you, but it may not be a top priority at the moment. But I do think that long term, coming out of a crisis situation, we can decide to think bigger about our lives. And in the past, this idea of working from home, it was very much aimed at like, oh, well, maybe people who need a little bit more work-life balance. It's not what the go-getters do. It's for those who want to tone things down a little bit, take a little time off. We all know you're not really working if you're working from home. So we understand that this is about work-life balance, what have you. And I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think that you can definitely build an empire from the new corner office. You can think big about your career. And so I challenge people to do that, to ask how they'd like to be spending their time, to think about long-term professional goals, to think about how they might get there, And a lot of that is just giving yourself the time and space to think. And, you know, unfortunately, in the new corner office, as in an old corner office, it can be very easy to fill all available space with answering emails and taking meetings and things like that. But actually consciously taking a step back and looking at our time and looking at our long-term ambitions gives us then the mental space to start making a plan to get there.
Do you think that when someone starts to embrace this idea of working from home and they're in it, you've got this experiment where people track their time. I know we talked earlier about managing tasks, not time, but you know, you and I both know that having an understanding of time is important because it helps you make better decisions with that resource that we have. Is now, like, what does that look like? I mean, I know you work from home, so it's going to be no different for you, but for somebody who may have been tracking their time before when they're in the office, or maybe thinking that they were versus now, is that experiment, like, how does that experiment play out now for somebody who's trying to embrace this new home office, a new corner office kind of mentality?
Well, I think it's always a good idea to track time after any big life change. So, you know, somebody has a new baby or, you know, gets married or moves or starts a new job. I mean, these are all good reasons to track time again, because a lot of time will be different, although there will also be some other things that are not so different. And that is important to see as well. If somebody is, you know, working from home a lot more now than they were in the past, it's definitely a good occasion to track your time and to see what it looks like, to say, well, this is sort of the rhythm I fall into on a good work from home day. This is what it looks like. So how can I try to then replicate that rhythm on days in general so that I have more good days? This is how I can make my weekdays feel different from my weekends, even though I'm in the same place, because these are the things that I like to do on weekends and, you know, can make the weekend look a little bit more special. So there are all sorts of insights you can gain by tracking time, whether you're working in an office or working from home.
And you can use good pens too. I know you talk about that. I was like,
use the good pens.
I was having a conversation with Doug Fraser, who's going to be on a future episode of the podcast. And I was talking about the Baron Fig stuff that I love using, like the pens and the notebooks and all that. And I think that you, when I read that part, it's a very brief part, but I'm like, yeah, you know, that's helped. That's helped me, you know, get into the groove, get into the mindset, the mind frame. Is that something that helps you too? Like even to this, like to this day where it's like, oh, this is, I get to use this thing now, or this is what I use this for. And it just elevates you.
Yeah. I mean, you want to elevate the everyday. You want to enjoy using your tools. I mean, if you hate writing on your laptop, you're going to have a problem. If you feel like you're cramped up because the screen's too small, you're going to have a problem. If you don't want to write because your pen's bad, or you don't come up with great ideas because you don't like writing in this, you know, free notebook from the bank, like these things are really self-defeating. You're much better off spending a little bit of extra money and getting the good stuff, the stuff that makes you feel like work has this element of pleasure to it. Starting with being comfortable in your workspace. If you're in, you know, a lot of people who started working from home for the first time in March probably grabbed whatever spot of the house was convenient or had a door or, you know, anything [S2] Yep. [S1] That would work for the time being. And that's fine. You know, in a crisis, we do what we have to. But if it's going to be part of your life long term, then it's worth figuring out, like, is this going to work long term? And, you know, maybe it's that you're going to have to move. I don't know. That might be to have a, you know, dedicated home office space. Or maybe it's that you're going to have to reconfigure a room or move stuff around just in order to have a spot that is comfortable, that is private, that is well lit, that makes you want to get your work done. So it's worth getting that right.
And I think it's important to note that that's an evolutionary process, like you said, because a lot of people, they'll try to get it just right when they'll deal with the emergency situation, right? They'll get that done. And then they'll be like, okay, now I have my office. Now let me get it set up just so. I mean, there's that old adage, how do you get a writer to clean their desk? Give them a book deadline, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like it's that idea. It's that thought of something, creating that perfect environment. It's, I think perfection is a crazy pursuit, but to get it to the point where you're like, okay, I like this. And then finding things and adding and mixing it up every once in a while can be really helpful, especially when you can't leave or you don't have the opportunity to go anywhere. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would also caution that people should use Pinterest responsibly. there are a lot of photos of home office setups out there, but many of these home office setups are not in any way intended for somebody who's going to work 40 hours a week right. in that setup.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, this tiny little vintage desk. Like, where are you going to put your stuff? Mm-hmm. These cool dining room upholstered chairs, like that is not going to work. Or a wall painted like bright magenta. It's like, no, it is not. Like, you're going to be staring at that all day long. And so, you know, it really think about what works for you, what makes you comfortable, what makes you feel productive. And if you like bright colors, maybe there's a nice throw pillow somewhere or a object on your desk in that color, rather than painting the whole room.
I want to talk a little bit as we get close to wrapping up about the idea of work-life integration. And I mean, as we're both parents, I just told you before we hopped on as we were recording this, my son is back in school for a couple days a week. So my work hours have kind of been, okay, well, this is when I work now, because you know, no one is home and I can do recordings, and that's when we're doing this right now. The idea that weekends, like everything kind of blends together. So having that work life, and I like how you use the term work life integration, because I do not like the term work life balance. It just doesn't, I think it's been, you know, overused that, and it almost feels tenuous. Like things are you're trying to kind of keep things, on the level, whereas integration, they are blending, or they are, you know, there is that they live together in harmony to a degree. You're at least trying to, for people who are dealing, let's talk about kids and parenting specifically. What's some of the things that people can do, especially when they have kids and they're doing this now, to kind of keep that work life integration in a place where they can feel like they are going to be able to bring their best selves that they can to those two different areas?
Yeah. Well, I mean, long term, if you work from home and have kids who are too young to watch themselves, then you need some form of childcare. And for many people, school serves this purpose, and that's fine. School mm-hmm. camp. Of course, then we've seen in the past few months that is no guarantee. So something to keep in mind. If you have kids who are younger than school age, then somebody else needs to be caring for them during the hours you're working. I know a lot of people were left in the lurch with that, obviously, with the pandemic. And so people have just had to do the best they can, usually by splitting hours between partners, or just being very, very good about organizing the day to do a lot during nap time and before the kids get up and after they go to bed. There are certainly ways to embrace work-life integration looking forward as people are back in more normal caregiving situations. I know that having a family lunch, for instance, is a great idea. I mean, you have to eat anyway. You mm-hmm. have to take breaks at some point. If there are other people in the house, well, try to coordinate it so you can all eat lunch together. And it won't work every day. But maybe just sort of having a general agreement that we try not to do stuff between 12 and 12:30, unless it's really, really important to happen at that exact time, means that you can spend your breaks with your family. Work-life integration can be more broadly understood, just, you know, that you could exercise, for instance, during the day. If there's a point where you have no more video calls, I mean, there's no reason that you can't get into your exercise clothes and then, you know, go exercise during a break between calls and be right back on. You're using time that probably would have just been spent cleaning out your inbox to do something far more productive in the grand scheme of things. So that's something you can do as well.
All right, Laura, as we get close to wrapping up here, I always try to ask my guests to offer one action that somebody can take today to kind of move forward with the mission or the mandate of whatever we've been talking about. So as we get ready to leave here, what's one simple action that somebody can take to kind of build momentum and move forward if they want to start building their new corner office, their new home corner office today?
I think about what would be your end of day ritual. I mean, a lot of people get their heads around something to start the day, but think about what would be a good end of day ritual. And I can suggest stuff like getting your to-do list ready for the next morning, so that when you start work the next morning, you know exactly what you want to execute on. But there's probably lots of different things you could try. But just think about what this might be, you know, what you could spend 5 minutes doing that would make the day feel more complete and like something special has just happened that you've ended it. And if you do that, I promise that your daily rhythm will feel a lot better.
Laura, this has been great. Thanks so much for taking the time to join me today. The book is called The New Corner Office, How the Most Successful People Work From Home. Where can people pick up the book and where can they keep up with you and your work?
So you can pick up this book. It's being sold first as an ebook with all the issues with distribution to actual physical stores. So any online retailer will have it. And then you can come visit me at lauravanderkam.com for news about my podcasts, my writing in general, and to connect with me.
Laura, thanks again for joining me today on the Productivityist Podcast.
Thanks for having me.